Tony said. I put in a warrant request before I got here, Vance said. When it clears, we'll take it to a service provider. If the phone was given to him by the League, you might not need the warrant, Diaz said. Van looked toward me at this and raised her eyebrow. I'm on it, I said. I gestured to the room again. Was there any chance anyone came into the room before us? Van nodded to Diaz, and a virtual screen popped up that showed the hallway outside of Kaufman's room running on fast forward. This is the security feed from the floor for the hour ahead of our arrival. This is Kaufman, she pointed to a sped-up version of him popping into his room. No one else in or out of his door until we show up. Other people going in and out of rooms, but it's just him and us here. Did the forensics people have anything to add? I asked. They said that it's a hotel room, so it's going to take them a while to process fingerprints and other data. The hotel chain has the service staff fingerprints on file, so that will at least help us trim down the number of people who will know we're in the room. But at least for now, there's no reason to think this is anything other than what it looks like. Where is Kaufman's body now? I asked. With the D.C. Medical Examiner's office. They're processing him today. They'll send along a preliminary report, including initial toxicology scans, so we're waiting on warrants, forensics, and the medical examiner. Yes, I said. To be fair, it's 9:13 on a Monday morning. We'll probably get the warrants first, and I'll check with the League as soon as we're done here. Van nodded and looked over to Tony. You're up. Tony looked over to Diaz, who wiped the hotel room from the viewing area. In its place, a long teal and orange ribbon popped up, with two columns, one for heart rate and the other for brain activity, one on top of the other. Van looked over at Tony questioningly. It's the visual design the League does for the stats, he said. It was easier to use it than extract out the raw data to present it visually. It's ugly, Van said. It's meant to pop. Ugly does pop, Van agreed. Okay, so there's three places I want to show you on this data. The visual data scrolled forward quickly and then slowed. Dwayne Chapman was GOAT three times in the game. That means he was the defensive player whose head was selected as the ball. You're mansplaining, he'll get it to me now, Van said. Tony held up a hand imploringly. Look, not everyone follows the game. I don't, Diaz volunteered. Tony motioned at Diaz as if to say, see? Go on, Van said. So, here's the first time, Tony pointed. You see the heart rate go up and the brain activity jiggle around a bit. That's because it hurts a little when the head gets pulled off. Not a lot, they dial it down, but enough that it motivates the player to avoid it. So, right around the level of an open face slap, pain-wise. It's reflected in the vital signs, a sharp spike, which comes back down because once the head's off the threep's sensory system is shut down. Why? Diaz asked. Because in the early days of the game, they found out if they didn't do that, some opposing team players would stomp on the downed threep just for the hell of it. Because some people are real dickheads. So the heart and brain activity go up, and then they come back down, Van said, getting Tony on track. Right, but now, look at the second time Chapman's the GOAT. The data flashed by and then stopped. This time, the heart and brain activity spikes are substantially higher, and they don't come down as far as they did the first time once the head is off the threep. To the extent this data correlates with pain, he's in a whole lot more of it, and it's not entirely going away. Someone dialed up the pain receptivity in his threep, I said. Haydens with threeps can increase or decrease the threep's pain receptivity. It's stupid to dial it down to zero. As with a human body, you can damage yourself really badly that way, and repairs are expensive. But reducing that receptivity can come in handy at times. You can also go in the other direction, but really, few do. You would think so. But the Bay's sideline tech director says the threep checked out. At least, that's what he says in a story I read this morning. And that's the data the League would have. They're always auditing threep adjustments and data feeds because the temptation to tweak the threeps out of standard setup is huge. So it's like car racing, Diaz said. Everyone has to race basically the same model car. Right, Tony said. In this case, it's one of four models, and there are some other modifications that are allowed, but everything has to be within a certain range. Step out of the range, and everyone gets penalized. And in this case, the tech guy would probably get fired. He's not going to lie about it in a press conference. If it's not the threep, then what is it? Van asked. I'm not sure, but whatever it is, it's significant. Tony started the feed scrolling again, but more slowly. Chapman's stats never really settle down after the second time he's the GOAT. In fact, they start being more erratic and on an upward stress path. So when he's GOAT for a third time right here, Tony pointed to a third substantial spike in the data, his vitals were already close to what they were in the second spike. And after this third spike, things get really messy. Tony was right. After the third spike, Chapman's vitals kept spiking wildly and chaotically. Here's where the feed was shut off, Tony said, pointing to a marker in the data stream. He pointed to another marker past the first. Here's where he went into cardiac arrest. And here, another marker, is where his brain activity shut down entirely. When he died, Van said. When death was likely inevitable, yes. So you're saying Chapman died from too much pain, I said. Well, no, Tony said. We know he was in pain because at the press conference last night, we were told that. He waved at the ribbon, now still. These data don't explicitly show any sort of pain, but strongly imply it. But these data are incomplete, especially the brain activity data, which measure a sort of generalized brain state, not any system or section of the brain in particular. It's for show, Van said. Basically, Tony agreed. It gives the league something to sell. It lets you see something was going on with Chapman's brain, but nothing specific enough to say anything with accuracy. Except to say he was in pain. Except to say that this data supports everyone's assertion that he was in pain, Tony amended. And anyway, pain is a symptom. Technically, I'd say Chapman died of the cardiac arrest, a heart attack. You'd have to check with the Philadelphia Medical Examiner for confirmation of that. In your opinion, has this data feed been tampered with? Van asked. No. Or if it has, the person who tampered with it is really good at what they do, Tony said. That's a preliminary assessment based on a couple hours examination. I'll run more detailed tests on it later, but even if it was tampered with, it's been tampered with to show pretty much what we already knew. Chapman died not long after his threep was taken off the field. So if it was tampered with, the question is, why? This brings us back to our original theory that Kaufman pulled the feed just out of sheer panic, I said. Van shook her head. We never stopped thinking it was panic. The question we don't know is why he panicked about it and why he killed himself over it. If he did. He did, Van said, and tilted her head up at the ribbon of data. If in every other moment of his life he was a smug, cocksure bastard, and everyone I talked to last night said he was, then it's something here that made him do a hard turn. So what do we do now? I asked. We hold that thought, and you show us what you got in Philly. I nodded and ported my information over to Diaz, who wiped Tony's data and brought up Chapman's burning apartment. Smoke, fire, and particulate matter was frozen in the air. Whoa. Tony said. I know, I said. I was there. What did you find? Van asked. Nothing, I thought. It just looked like a basic groupie den. And you know what a groupie den looks like, how? You recall I was famous for a while, yes? This isn't entirely new to me. Van cocked her head at me. Did you have a groupie den, Chris? You're joking. I am, but I'm maybe 5% actually curious. I'd go as high as 10%, Tony said. Diaz looked quietly uncomfortable. You are both terrible people, and also no, I said. And anyway, that's what I thought it was, until someone else showed up and activated one of the threeps. Which one? Van asked. I pointed to one of the ones with the grooves in it. She peered at it. I don't recognize that model. I don't recognize any of the models, I said. That looks like a Van Diemen, Tony said, pointing to the threep with a penis. Van blinked. And you know this how? Obviously, because I've been in close proximity to one. Go on, Van said. You want to know my sexual history? No, Van made a swatting motion. I mean, tell us more about this company. Not much to it, Tony said. There's a market for these. The big guys don't want to officially touch them, so Van Diemen licenses their tech and makes modifications. Makes models with both sexes. And that? Van pointed to the one with ridges. Tony shrugged. I've never seen one of those, but it looks like it's basically for the same purpose. Van looked over to me. Chris, she said. Already on it, I replied. I had pulled up a screen on the company. They're based out of Baltimore. What happened to those threeps in Chapman's apartment? Van asked. They got burned up. I had the Philly police impound the remains. We'll bring the one that moved with us tomorrow and hit Van Diemen on the way back from Philly, Van said. Do you have anything else? I have Chapman's townhouse footage with his room. Let's see it. I sent it over to Diaz, who popped it up. We all looked at the room. Yes, that's a room, Van said, finally. That was kind of my thought as well, I said. Anyone else? Van asked Tony and Diaz. Actually, Tony said. Yes? Can you zoom in on the IV bag? Van nodded to Diaz, who zoomed in on the bag. She glanced over to me. I shrugged. Tony pointed at the bag. That's not right. What's not right about it? Van asked. It's the wrong brand, Tony said. Van frowned. I don't know what that means. The IV is full of supplements that the league allows the players to have during the game, to keep them alert and whatnot, right? Well, the top Hilketa players have endorsement deals for their IV supplements, the ones that don't use the league-endorsed supplements. That's Tiger Tone. But the bag says Labrum on it. Chapman didn't have an endorsement deal with Labrum. Okay, and so? Van said. Maybe Chapman just wanted a change. Tony shook his head. That's not how endorsements work. The NAHL could get sued for Chapman not using Tiger Tone during a game. And Chapman could be fined by the Bays for it, unless he had his own endorsement deal. He didn't. Van nodded. So you're wondering why the switch? And what's in the bag, I added. Then I paused and turned to Diaz. Bring up Chapman's secret apartment again, please. Diaz did. Bring up the front room full size, I asked. He did. What are you looking for? Van asked. That, I said, and pointed to a box in the corner of the room near one of the threeps, partially obscured by static smoke. It says Labrum on it. That could be anything. I nodded. It could be anything, but it's specifically something. I pointed to a shipping code on the top of the box. We can follow up on that. And while we're at it, I asked for Diaz to go back to Chapman's townhouse and zoomed in again on the IV bag. Each bag has its own serial number. It will tell us when it was produced and what batch it was part of. If we know that much, we might know whether it was shipped to Chapman directly or if he got it from someone else. Van frowned. You think it might have something to do with his death? I don't know, I said, but if Tony's right and it's not supposed to be there, then we should probably try to figure out why it is. We don't know why Chapman's body freaked out during the game, and we can't take any explanation for granted. We have to find out about what was going on with his body and what was going on with his threep. So we get that bag and test it. Then we need to get a medical report from the Philadelphia Medical Examiner. Then we need to talk to the people in charge of the threeps at the Boston Bays. You talked to Chapman's caregiver? Alton Ortiz, yes. And he didn't say anything about the IV being different? No. Maybe we should ask him again. We can do that, along with checking with the Philly ME. In the meantime, we should get someone from our Philly branch over to Chapman's townhouse to collect that bag as evidence. Van smiled slightly at this. Let me do that. I don't think they want to do anything nice for you yet. Fair point. We also need to go back to Strawberry Mansion and talk to some of the people in the building. Find out what was going on in that love nest of Chapman's and why the building burned up. Yes, I agreed. Now, what do we do about Kaufman? Oh, him, Van said, and then looked at me. I don't know, Chris. What do we do? This was not Van actually being confused about what to do next. This was Van, the senior partner, quizzing her junior partner, me, about the job. This was how our working relationship had started a year earlier and how it had continued. I suspected that we could be working together for a decade and I would still get the quiz. Get the warrants or clearance from the league and get the medical examiner here in D.C. and the forensics teams to expedite their examinations. And what about what connects Kaufman with Chapman? You got me, I said. And anyway, my day's already scheduled out. Van smirked. Then she turned to Diaz. Bring up the hotel room again. Kaufman's hotel room zoomed into view. I think we missed something, she said to me. I looked at the room again, studying it. I got nothing, I said, after a couple of minutes. This is where your being a Hayden is giving you a blind spot. Van pointed to the bed. The bed's a mess. Okay, so? Pull up your security feed, Van said to Diaz. He pulled it up and put it into its own virtual screen again and once more put it on fast forward. Here's Kaufman coming into the room. It's about 45 minutes before we arrive. So he took a nap, I said. Not a lot of time, and he'd had a stressful day. All the more reason for a nap. From how everyone described him, he doesn't strike me as the napping type. His room might not have been made up from the morning, Tony said. Does that hotel security feed of yours go back further? Van asked Diaz. I've got about 6 hours of it, he said. Run it back and see if the room got serviced. Diaz zoomed the feed back until the service card appeared, and the staff, in reverse, went into the rooms and back out of them again. In short order, the cart was in front of Kaufman's door and the staff member inside. That answers that, Van said. It's not exactly conclusive, I suggested. Your hunch about his personality type notwithstanding, maybe Kaufman really liked his catnaps. Van ignored this. Has the room been released yet? To the hotel? I don't know. Find out. If it's not, get a forensics team back over there. If it has been, get a forensics team back over there anyway. And get the hotel to keep their staff out of the room next to Kaufman's too, until our people can look at it. Why? Van pointed to the visual of the room. Look again, she said. I suppressed the urge to gripe and looked again. This time, after a minute, I saw it. The interior door, I said. The interior door, Van agreed. Which opens up into the next room if someone wants to rent both and make a suite out of them. Or, maybe, if someone wants to take an adjoining room to be able to get from one room to the other without making a public scene about it. Still thin, I said. Probably. Van smiled without much joy. She looked like she was up against her time limit for needing some nicotine. But let's be sure. And let's get a name on that room. If we're lucky, maybe they won't have checked out yet. Let's get that done before we head to Philly. And by let's get that done, you mean you do it, don't you? Yes, Van said. Yes, I do. Then you drive to Philly and back. I was going to do that anyway, because while we're driving, I have something else I want you to do. What's that? Talk to your parents. Chapter 7. The agency vehicle we usually drove around in was in the shop. Van went to get another out of the motor pool. I didn't want to wait with her while she argued with the staff there over which car she got. She would get cranky, and the motor pool would get cranky back, and I would end up like the kid who felt sad that Mommy and Daddy were fighting. I told her to pick me up in front of the main entrance and headed out of doors to enjoy a typically muggy Washington day. Around me, people were already visibly sweating. I turned down my heat sensitivity and felt mildly smug about being a Hayden. And then stopped feeling smug when a small pack of reporters fell on me, shouting questions about the case. My threep had been recognized. I don't have any comments, I said, holding up my hands. Come on, Chris, one of the reporters said. I scanned his face, and the database came up with Dave Miller, who wrote about Hilketta for the Post. Your press people aren't being very helpful. Maybe that's because it's an ongoing case, and we don't like talking about those, I suggested. If it's an ongoing case, then it suggests that there's something going on besides a natural death, right? I cocked my head at Miller. That's a nice leading question, I said. Are you going to ask me when I stopped beating my partner next? You're confirming you have a partner? Miller asked, cracking a smile as he got the allusion. What about Commissioner Kaufman? Asked another reporter, this one popping up as Carrie Wise from the Hilketta News. Well, see, that would also be an ongoing investigation, wouldn't it? I said. And what do we know about ongoing investigations? You could tell us off the record, Wise said. Everyone in the small press scrum groaned and looked at Wise. What? Wise said, looking around. You're new at this, aren't you? I asked. No, Wise said defensively. Now you've just guaranteed Chris will never say anything to anyone on or off the record, moron, said another journalist. Ding, I said. and then pointed to the various security cameras around us. Here's a pro tip. Don't ask an FBI agent to go off the record in public in front of microphones and video cameras in front of the actual FBI building. When will the FBI have a statement? This question from Leona Garza from WTTG. Ask our press folks. We did. They didn't say anything. Maybe ask them to speak off the record, I said. What about the protesters yesterday? Wise asked. What protesters? The ones protesting the Hilketa game yesterday, Wise said. Are they being investigated in conjunction with yesterday's events? I paused for a second. That's a fairly random question, I finally said. They're not just random protesters, Wise said. They've got some serious funding. Uh-huh. Okay, Miller interjected and then positioned himself in front of me and Wise. If you can't tell us about the investigation, Chris, can you at least tell us about saving that woman from a fire last night in Philly? There was a honk. Van had pulled up in our car. My ride's here, I said, and walked through the mini scrum, waving. Miller protested, not getting an answer. I kept waving until I got into the car. You're popular, Van said as I got in. It's not me, it's our case. I buckled up and then looked at the car. This is nice. Nicer than our usual car. Yeah, well, Van said. She pulled away from the curb. They tried to give me that goddamn Fiesta. I was going to shoot somebody. It's just a car, I said. Spoken like someone who doesn't have to worry about their spine being compressed for 3 hours on the way to Philly and 3 hours back. We can get someone from the Philly Bureau to cover for us, I said. Handled a little chat with the director there by video. Nice try getting out of that, Van said, smirking. And anyway, I know the person covering Hayden Affairs there, Rachel Ramsey. And? We're going to Philly. I've been your partner for a year, and in all that time, I'm not entirely sure I've ever heard you say anything nice about anyone else in law enforcement, I said. Van fished a cigarette pack out of her suit jacket pocket. I don't hate you. That's reassuring. I'm going to smoke on the way. You know they hate it when you do that. I get yelled at by the motor pool people because they think yelling at me will change your mind about doing it. I tell them it won't. They yell at me anyway. Sorry. That's why they tried to give you the Fiesta. What happened to your electronic cigarette? It broke. Get a new one. They're expensive. And cigarettes are cheap at 12 bucks a pack? I question your budgeting skills. Did the press get anything from you? Van asked, changing the subject. No, I said. I can handle a scrum, and this was a small one. Although one of them asked a weird question. It was a reporter from some outlet called the Hilketa News. You heard of it? Not really. There were protesters at the game saying that Hilketa was discriminatory. Wise, the Hilketa News reporter, implied they weren't just cranky dudes, that they're organized and funded by someone. Well, fuck, Van said. The protesters being funded? No, I can't find my lighter. The motor pool staff will be happy to hear that. We're stopping at a convenience store. You're driving, I said. Stop wherever you want. So these protesters are being funded, Van said. So what? I think Wise's implication is that there's something sinister about it. And? No other and. Just wondering if we're investigating them as well. I think we're going to be busy enough. And anyway, the protesters aren't wrong, paid or not. Hilketa is discriminatory. Ah, that's crap, I said. It's the least discriminatory major sport in the country. There's no gender or racial or sexual barrier to play. It helps a lot to be a Hayden. That's like saying that there's discrimination in basketball because there's no one on the Washington Wizards roster shorter than 6 feet tall. An artificial neural network in your head isn't a de facto requirement in order to play in the NBA. No, you just need generations of genetic selection to make you 2 meters tall, I countered. In both cases, something entirely not up to you has come into play. Genetics or a virulent disease requiring you to get a dangerous implant in your brain to get along in the world. One of these is worse than the other. None of which doesn't mean Hilketa isn't discriminatory, Van said. Jesus, Van, I said. I'm getting the feeling you were one of those I'm just playing devil's advocate assholes in college. I wasn't, but I punched a few of them. Van carefully placed her cigarette back into her pack. You interrupted me to be outraged, before I finished my actual thought, which was, the protesters weren't wrong. It is discriminatory. And also, who gives a shit? Because it's not legally discriminatory. And it's mostly discriminatory on the basis of skill, just like every other major sport. It helps to be more than 6 feet tall in pro basketball, but there have been enough players who haven't been to say skill can compensate. I'm pretty sure it's the same for Ilketa. I was quiet for a moment. So what you're saying is that I yelled at you for nothing. Pretty much. But you argued back. Yes, well, Van stuffed her cigarette pack back in her jacket pocket. I'm a little edgy at the moment. We need to find you that convenience store. We really do. Van took back control of the car. I know where one is near here. While I'm doing that, go visit your parents and have a talk with them. By the time you get back, I'll be a little less jittery. So I went to visit my parents, which was easy to do because, unlike most Haydens, I had more than one Threep. My main one, a Sebring Warner 680XS, was the one in the passenger seat of the FBI car on the way to Philly. I'd gotten it when I'd traded in my 660XS, which had been relatively new, but which, thanks to my gig, I put a lot of wear and tear into. The 680XS had, as I noted to Van earlier, all the bells and whistles. My second Threep was a Cayman Zephyr. A nice model, although this particular Threep was extensively refurbished. This one stayed at my parents' house because I liked visiting my parents, and sometimes I didn't feel like dealing with traffic in my 680XS. Also, my biological body was still at my parents' place, even though I rented my room in D.C., and my main Threep stayed there. If I needed to quickly engage with my biological body in some way, I'd pop into the Zephyr. I had a third Threep, too, a Brummel Mayer von 3, which was kept in the family vacation home in the Jackson Hole Valley. It was specifically designed for skiing and winter sports. The MV3 is essentially a snowmobile for Haydens. I've mentioned the family was wealthy. We do obnoxious wealthy things from time to time, like have vacation homes in Jackson Hole and own ridiculously specialized equipment. I don't even like skiing all that much. The ability to switch from one Threep to another almost instantly could be disconcerting for non-Haydens. It felt a little like teleportation to them. I explained it now and again by saying it's not really any different from switching between a phone and a tablet, but admittedly there's a scaling issue between looking at one screen and then at a different one and seemingly moving one's consciousness from one machine body to another, which could be half a planet away, which really was kind of like teleportation, come to think of it. The secret is that neither I nor any Haydn ever really goes anywhere. We're always in the same place, in our bodies. Mine was in suburban Northern Virginia, in a sunny room at my parents' house, in a top-of-the-line creche, with a full-time caregiver watching over it at all times, and a spare Threep sitting in an induction chair in case I want to use it, which I did, now, to visit with my mother and father. I didn't just drop in. Despite the fact that my biological body was in the house, I now spent most of my conscious time at the home I shared with Tony and my other flatmates. Other than actual physical emergencies involving my body, I tried to give my parents a heads up when I was coming over. There was always a risk of dropping in at an inappropriate time. This is a phrase that works on many different levels, but in this particular case, it would mean popping in on Dad when he was trying to do business. But when I pinged Mom about coming over, she simply said, "Do. I think your father could use your perspective with one of his visitors." I found out what that meant when I caught up with Dad and his visitors in the trophy room. It was the room in which Dad kept the memorabilia from his NBA career and his business life. The point of it was to humble the millionaires and billionaires he met with. It usually worked. Sure, you might be a billionaire, but were you a billionaire with four NBA championship rings like Dad? Probably not. Sit down. "Chris!" Dad smiled widely at me when I came in and got up from the couch where he was sitting with his two visitors, an older man and a younger woman. Both looked somewhat familiar. He crossed the room and gave me a hug. "Good to see you, kid." "I know, it's been so long," I joked. "You're kidding with me, I get that, but I didn't really get to see you yesterday, now did I?" Dad said. "No, I guess not," I admitted. Dad nodded and motioned towards guests. "You'll recognize Wendell Gordon, the North American Ilketa League commissioner, and this is Amelie Parker, who is the CEO of a startup named Mobilon." Now I recognized where I knew both of them. Gordon I'd seen yesterday at the game. He'd been the NAHL executive who'd looked directly at me when his apparatchik was talking in his ear, telling him about Dwayne Chapman. It's possible that he might not have known that Threep was me at the time. Parker, I recognized, not because of Parker, whom I had never met before, but because the woman in front of me was an integrator, a person Hayden's hired to borrow their bodies. Integrators had a neural net in their brains as well, which allowed Hayden's to connect with their bodies and then control them with some small assistance from the integrators themselves. Integrators are fairly rare. There's only about 10,000 of them in the United States, so they tend to have multiple clients who use their services at different times. This particular integrator was Lena Fowler, who was relatively new to the D.C. area. I recognized her because one of her clients was someone Van and I investigated for wire fraud a few months earlier. That client pleaded guilty and was now serving 3 years in a Hayden-specific federal penitentiary. She would not be using Fowler's services again for a while, at least. Mr. Gordon, Ms. Parker, I said, nodding to both. As was customary, I did not acknowledge Fowler because she was working for a client, and the client was presenting. I looked over at Gordon. My condolences on Dwayne Chapman and Alex Kaufman, sir. Thank you. And thank you for the League's cooperation with the Bureau's investigation of their deaths. Gordon was momentarily surprised and then made the connection of what it was that I did and the fact that I was in the luxury suite the day before. Yes, yes. We're happy to assist. As a matter of disclosure, you understand I cannot give you any information about the current state of either investigation, nor am I able to share such information with either of my parents. Yes, of course, Gordon said. I nodded again at that. Both Wendell and Amelie are here to try to make a hard press for me to join the Washington Hilketa franchise as a minority owner, Dad said. And that's minority owner in more than one way. Isn't that right, Wendell? Gordon looked nonplussed at what Dad said, but then recovered. Yes, I suppose that's correct. He turned to me. Hilketa is one of the nation's fastest growing sports, and we're proud of the diversity of our players and fans, but one area we could do better in is ownership. He means that nearly all the NAHL franchise owners are white and male, and almost none of them have any personal connection with Hayden's in their own family, Dad said, smiling. That's an artifact of the early rounds of funding and ownership, Gordon said, hastily. We were ambitious, but perhaps not entirely wise in those early days. We're looking to this expansion round of franchise ownership to do a bit of course correction. So you're interested in my dad being a part owner of the DC team because he's black and because I'm his kid, I said. Yes, Parker said, interjecting before Gordon had a chance to attempt to fumble through an answer to that question. And if those were the only reasons we were interested in your father, and both of your parents, really, then you would be absolutely right to call the league out on its tokenism, just like you could call them out on tokenism for me because I'm a Hayden. But in both our cases, it's not just that. I mean, come on, Chris. Parker motioned toward Dad. This is Marcus Shane, 4-time champion with the Wizards. If anyone's an actual living icon of Washington, D.C., it's your dad. He knows more about the city and the business of the city and the sports life of this town than anyone else. Now that's what I call quality buttering up, Dad said. Parker smiled and laughed. Thank you. I try. Amelie, maybe you can tell Chris about Mobile On, Dad turned to me. Amelie's about to do a second round of funding for her company, and independent of whatever happens with the league, I'm considering making an investment. I'd be curious as to what you think of her business model. I leaned into Dad and got close to his ear. I'm actually here to speak to you, you know, I said in a low voice. I know. This is almost over. We moved our heads away, and then Dad motioned to Parker. Do the elevator pitch, Amelie. Two words, Parker said. Timeshare Threeps. Come again, I said. It's simple, Parker continued. With the passing of Abrams Kettering, we're in a unique moment in the history of personal transports. Before AK, I found myself slightly unsettled by the Abrams Kettering bill being referred to in a jargony acronym. Ownership of Threeps was limited to Hayden families for the use of Haydens, and the purchase price largely subsidized through tax credits and low-interest loans. Now those subsidies are gone, which means the real-world price has gone up. That's bad for a lot of Haydens, who now can't afford a Threep, and for the makers of Threeps, who are seeing their sales fall through the floor. Mobilon helps solve both of those problems. By renting Threeps to Haydens? By offering a subscription that allows access to Threeps. Renting is shorter, I said, and there are already places to rent Threeps. That's where the difference is, Parker smiled. She was well into the meat of her presentation. You rent a Threep if you're traveling to another city and you don't want the expense of transporting your own Threep, or if your primary Threep is getting maintenance. With Mobilon, you get rid of the personal Threep entirely. I had an internal shudder at that. Why? Because thanks to Abrams Kettering, personal Threeps are too expensive for a lot of Haydens, Dad said. Right, Parker acknowledged Dad's point. We could discuss the philosophical aspects of that and be here all day, but at the end of it, it wouldn't change the fact that a lot of Haydens, a lot of us, Chris, can't afford to buy and maintain their own Threeps. Nor should they. How much time do Haydens actually spend in their Threeps on a daily basis? I'm in mine constantly. I'm an FBI agent. Parker made a motion with her hands, acknowledging the point. You may not be our core user demographic, she allowed. But our studies show that more Haydens are spending less time in Threeps. They're spending more time in the Agora. And here she acknowledged Dad, who a year ago made a major financial investment in the Hayden community's primary online space. And otherwise doing their business through the virtual world. I know I do. I hardly ever use my Threep anymore. I was tempted to point out that Parker was saying this while using an integrator, the cost of which was exponentially higher on a per capita basis than using a Threep with any regularity. I decided not to. And you think this will be popular with people who have owned their own Threeps all this time, was what I said instead. We know that Haydens, like everyone, appreciate value. And we also know that the makers of personal transports would be delighted to have a mass buyer of Threeps until the next market comes. She means non-Hayden users of Threeps here, Dad pointed out. Yes, Parker said. Now that AK has opened up the market to non-Haydens, it's just a matter of time before they start using them. Older people, those with non-Hayden mobility issues, able-bodied people who want to travel to faraway destinations but can't take the time or make the financial investment for a full vacation. There's an explosion of Threep use less than a decade out. Some of these new users will want to own their own Threeps, but others will just want access. So your business model is to use Hayden's reduced circumstances to reconfigure the Threep manufacturing industry to your specifications just long enough for the Haydens to become an afterthought to the Threep manufacturing business entirely, I said. I'm not the one who passed AK, Chris. Parker was using a tone of voice that suggested she was often in a position of having to sound like she was very sorry that circumstances had come to this pass. We work in the world that exists. In the world that exists, this isn't just the reality, it's an opportunity. What do you think, Chris? Dad asked. I nodded to Parker. I think you have your finger on the financial pulse of our times, Ms. Parker. Parker smiled at this. Now, what do you really think? Dad asked, after he had said his goodbyes to Gordon and Parker and promised them they would hear from him soon about the franchise. I hate every single possible thing about it, I said. Dad nodded. I thought you might. He motioned with his head in the direction Parker and Gordon had exited. But she's not wrong, you know. Demand for Threeps is cratered. Haydens are spending less time out in the physical world. That's because they can't afford their Threeps anymore, I pointed out. Amelie does tend to gloss over the arrow of causation there, Dad allowed. But either way you point that arrow, it makes an argument for a service like Mobilon. It feels like blood-sucking, I said. She's not doing this to help Haydens. She's doing it to be first in line when everyone else wants to rent a Threep. You think Haydens will get pushed to the side with her business model then? We're already being pushed to the side. And Threeps are more important to Haydens than she's saying. They're not just a service. Dad nodded again, then looked over at me. I knew you wouldn't like it, he said. I told Amelie I thought you wouldn't. She told me she was curious what you might think, which is why I made her tell you about it when you showed up today. But you seem to like it even less than I thought you would. I'm in a bad mood, I admitted. Van and I were talking about the people protesting Hilketa because there are no non-Hayden players, and I hear about this startup basically about making Haydens rent their Meat World identity until the non-Haydens come around to marginalize them entirely. I feel like we're slowly getting nudged out of our own space. Join the club, Dad said. Well, sort of. You and I, we have some breathing room. I've been thinking about that part of it, too, I said. So, you going to invest in the company? I'm going to think about it some more, Dad said. Now, let's you and I and your mother talk. What are you looking for? The same thing you just wanted out of me, Dad. I want some perspective. Chapter 8. Van jumped a little when I popped back into my threep, causing the car to swerve until the lane assist kicked in. Jesus, she said. You knew I was coming back, I told her. Right, but you've just been sitting there motionless for 90 minutes and then suddenly you twitch. Sorry. It's fine. What did you get out of your parents? The NAHL is definitely still pushing the difficulty at home and self-medicating angles. Did you let your parents know otherwise? No, I said. It's an ongoing investigation. Check out the ethics on you, Van murmured. You're not surprised, I hope. No, just reminded you and I are very different people. But also the NAHL might still not be wrong, at least in terms of forbidden substances. You mean because of that switched IV bag of supplements? Supplements, Van said, and I could hear the quotation marks around the word. That's what I mean. Yes, it's entirely possible there's something in there that wasn't approved by the league. Something that would increase his pain sensitivity and give him a heart attack. I'm sure that wasn't the intended effect, Van said. I can't think of anything that would do that. Well, neither can I, Chris, but that's not really our area of expertise, is it? I thought about that for a second. Hold on, I said to Van, and made a phone call. I was sleeping. Taylor Givens, my flatmate, said to me as she answered. It's noon, I said. I'm a doctor at a hospital, she said. I have long shifts. I'm going to have another long shift real soon. You're lucky you don't keep your body at the house or I'd walk my threep over to your room and punch you. Sorry, I have a quick question, medical related. Medical related for you or for your job? For the job. Does this mean I get a consulting fee like Tony? Sure. If you want to fill in all the federal government contracting forms and submit to the required background check, I can send you all that paperwork today. Taylor groaned. What is your stupid question? She asked. You know about Haydens-specific pharmaceuticals, right? Yes, because I'm a doctor and a Hayden. Can you think of any that we know increase a Hayden's susceptibility to pain? You mean aside from the ones that would do the same to anyone, not just Hayden's? Right. As an intended result, no. That's not something we generally aim for, medically speaking. As a side effect, I can think of a couple. Not their specific names, because you woke me up and my brain is fuzzy. Would any of those also be used as a performance enhancer? Like, say, on a Hilketa field? Taylor asked. It doesn't have to be a Hilketa field. Right. This is entirely a hypothetical question. Of course it is, Taylor said, and the sarcasm in her voice was notable. The short answer is no. The longer answer is more complicated, and for a question you didn't actually ask. What question is that? Whether any drug can increase a Hayden's susceptibility to pain? I did ask that, I protested. No, you asked if we knew of any drug that did that. The question is whether any known drug could do that, or whether increasing pain sensitivity is the drug's intended function or a known side effect. What's the difference? The difference is that every Hayden brain is significantly different, Taylor said. The disease rearranges our gray matter differently in each case, and each brain recovers differently from the attack. As a result, every Hayden brain is idiosyncratic. It's one of the difficulties of Hayden-specific medicine. We can't just assume that any one Hayden isn't going to have that same reaction to a drug as another Hayden or as a non-Hayden patient. So you're saying that aspirin could make a Hayden more pain-sensitive? Probably not aspirin or a drug designed to lessen pain, but any other drug idiosyncratically decreasing pain tolerance? It's possible, sure. Likely? No, but possible. That's why we call it idiosyncratic. So theoretically, a Hayden could take a performance enhancer that has no known side effects to anyone else and have a reaction to it no one else ever has. Yes, Taylor said. Performance enhancer or any other drug. And now you know why your doctors have always been very, very careful with your medicines, Chris. Can you get me the names of the drugs we know have pain-enhancing qualities for Haydens? That's actual work, Chris. You'd be my favorite flatmate. Taylor groaned again. Whatever. I'll see what I can come up with. Not now, though. I'm going back to sleep, and I'm blocking your call signal. Fair enough. Sweet dreams. Taylor grunted and disconnected. So basically anything could have made this happen, Van said after I caught her up on the conversation. Basically, I agreed. And if there was something different in the supplement bag, something knowingly put in there? Marla Chapman and Alton Ortiz lied to me. Or they didn't know. Marla Chapman, maybe, I said. Dwayne was keeping secrets from her. But how could Ortiz not know? That's part of his job. Van shrugged. Ortiz is on our schedule today, so we ask him again. Much less nicely this time. But first, we go to Philadelphia's medical examiner. No point going good cop, bad cop on Ortiz if there's nothing there. Having nothing hasn't stopped you from doing that before, I noted. Yeah, but we have a busy schedule today, Van said, and I don't want to be in Philadelphia any longer than I have to.
Drugs? What kind of drugs? Asked Sarah Powell, the medical examiner assigned to Dwayne Chapman.
We met her in her office, which was all right by me. I didn't actually like visiting the morgue.
You tell us, Van said.
Well, if you're talking recreational, our initial toxicology workup didn't catch anything like that in Mr. Chapman's system, Powell said. And nothing in my initial examination suggests any long-term abuse of drugs or alcohol.
No cirrhosis of the liver or anything like that.
Definitely no cirrhosis. Mr. Chapman's liver looked pristine. This isn't unusual for Haydens. Statistically, fewer of them drink than the general non-Hayden population. It's not the same sort of social activity.
It can be managed, I said.
Of course, Powell allowed. I didn't say it was non-existent.
Just not at the same level as the non-Hayden population.
That said, while I didn't find any evidence of casual drug or alcohol use, Mr. Chapman's workup turned up a lot of pharmacological elements consistent with his status as a Hayden and other known issues. He had an autoimmune disorder, so drugs relating to that disorder are present in his system.
Can we get a list of those? I asked.
It'll all be in my full report.
Anything else? Van asked.
You'd have to be more specific, Powell said.
Chapman was a professional athlete. Anything in there that might have been performance enhancing?
Powell frowned. You're the third person to ask me that today.
Who were the first two? Van asked.
The first said he was a representative of the sports league Mr. Chapman was involved in, a lawyer.
Oliver Medina? I asked.
Powell nodded.
That's right.
Who was the other?
A reporter of some sort?
Called me on my personal phone, which really kind of pissed me off. That number isn't public. Name escapes me at the moment. Name started with a C or a K?
Carrie Wise, I said.
Powell blinked. Do you know these people?
It's a small world, at least as far as the death of Dwayne Chapman is concerned, Van said.
What did you tell them?
I told them both the same thing, that they could wait for my initial public report, which will be later this week.
Is that what you're going to tell us, too?
I'm going to tell you that I don't know. I don't know what qualifies as performance-enhancing for a Hayden athlete. That's outside my normal experience. She turned to me. No offense.
None taken, I said. I'm not much of an athlete anyway.
Powell smiled at this and turned back to Van. The workup for recreational drug use is something we do a lot, and we know Mr. Chapman's medical history, so we know to look for those specific drugs as well. Everything else, all the stuff we don't know to expect, takes a little longer.
So it'll take you a while, is what you're saying to me.
What I'm saying to you is that if you know what I'm supposed to be looking for, then you can tell me, and I'll look for it.
Do you know how much a threep costs these days, Agent Shane?
Laura Burgess, head of the Philadelphia FBI office, asked me.
Van and I were there for our requested meetup and for my scheduled dressing down. Along with the three of us, another agent was in Burgess's office with us, Rachel Ramsey, whom Van famously did not think much of. All too well, ma'am, I admitted. I also know that the particular Model 3 I borrowed from your office runs about $50,000.
You understand that our current president and Congress aren't all that keen on expanding government agency budgets, Burgess said. $50,000 vehicles don't exactly grow on trees.
Burgess pointed to Ramsey.
If Agent Ramsey here took a $50,000 car and rammed it into a tree, how do you think that would go over?
To be fair, Shane did rescue an unconscious woman from a burning building, Van said.
And then went back inside the building, Ramsey said. Van shot her a look.
To rescue a cat, Burgess said. Had Agent Shane destroyed a $50,000 vehicle rescuing an old lady, we wouldn't be having this conversation now. But I think we can all agree that as fond as we might be of our pets, very few are worth destroying $50,000 worth of government property over. And in this case, it wasn't even your cat, Agent Shane.
Where is the cat? Ramsey asked.
It ran away, I said.
Huh. Ramsey said.
Did you follow up on the information I sent you? Van asked Ramsey.
About the supplement bag?
The supplement bag and the box barcode Agent Shane found in the apartment.
We sent an agent to retrieve the bag and ran the code from the box and from the bag, Ramsey said.
The bag was from a batch that Labrum produced 3 weeks ago. The box in question was part of a shipment that was sent to the Boston Bay's offices about 2 weeks ago.
What about the contents of the bag? Van asked.
We have the lab folks looking into it right now.
So it's a reasonable assumption that the bag came out of that box.
What's your point?
Burgess asked.
My point is that in going back into the building and scanning that room, Agent Shane retrieved information relevant to the current investigation, Van said. It wasn't just a matter of rescuing a cat. We have two deaths under suspicious circumstances, and this is a material piece of information.
Burgess looked at me coolly.
And do you think a box code was worth my $50,000 vehicle, Agent Shane?
I couldn't say, ma'am, I said. We're still investigating, but I will say that this opens up an interesting new avenue in the investigation.
How so?
The supplement bag is a different brand than Chapman was supposed to be using. I was echoing what Tony was saying earlier in the day, but Burgess didn't know that, and I wasn't going to tell her. The box was apparently originally shipped to the Boston Bays. That means it was probably meant for a player there. Chapman probably got the supplements from that player. We find out which Bays players have Labrum IV supplement endorsement deals, and we likely have a connection to follow up on, especially if your lab people find anything interesting in the contents of that bag. I don't know if the box code is worth a threep, but this lead could be. Burgess looked at Ramsey, who gave a shrug. We already had the bag, she said. The information from the box code is useful, but it doesn't tell us anything we probably wouldn't have figured out without it. Chapman was a player on the Bays. It would have made sense to look at the players there anyway.
I agree, Burgess said. It was reckless of you to go back into that building, Agent Shane. As a result, this office doesn't have a threep, and Agent Ramsey here, Burgess nodded at her subordinate, has to deal with a ridiculous amount of paperwork in order to explain how it burned up and why we should be able to requisition another one. It also means that until a new threep is approved, any Hayden agent, including you, Agent Shane, who needs to work with our office, has to rent one and jump through all the requisition hoops that requires. You know what a pain in the ass that is.
Yes, ma'am, I said.
I'm putting a disciplinary note in your record, Burgess said to me. And I want to be clear that if you hadn't saved that old woman from the building, I'd be doing more than filing a disciplinary note. I'd have you fired. I don't care who you are or who your dad is, Agent Shane. Agents work for a living, and we owe it to taxpayers not to waste their taxes on stunts like rescuing cats. Do you understand me?
I do, ma'am.
Good. I'll send that note to the DC office today.
I wouldn't do that, Van said.
Excuse me? Burgess said to Van.
You heard me, Van said.
I did hear you, Burgess agreed. I'm just not sure why you thought you needed to offer an opinion, Agent Van.
I'm offering an opinion here because Shane might not know what you're up to, Director Burgess, but I do.
And what am I doing, Van?
Van jerked a thumb at Ramsey.
You're trying to cover her dumbass.
Oh, Christ, Van, Ramsey said. Don't be ridiculous. Van ignored Ramsey and kept looking at Burgess.
This idiot is the one responsible for the threep, yes? Because she's the Hayden Affairs desk here. And as soon as you file the disciplinary note, Director Burgess, Ramsey here is going to petition for the official responsibility for the condition of the threep to be put on Shane's head, not hers, and the cost of its replacement to come out of the D.C. office's budget, not yours.
Shane did run back into a flaming building, Ramsey said. This might seem like a trivial matter to you, but I think it might be considered relevant.
Van turned to me. Why did the threep burn up?
Because I ran out of power, I said.
And why did you run out of power?
Because the threep was at about 13% when I arrived, I said. It was off its induction pad, and the pad wasn't plugged in anyway.
It's plugged in, Ramsey said.
It is now, I agreed, because I plugged it in when I got here.
And you have a record of this, Van prompted me.
I was on duty, I said. Of course I was recording.
Van nodded and turned to Burgess. If Shane had been given a fully topped-off threep, as FBI regulations specify, I might add, none of us would be in this office right now having this little conversation. Agent Shane could have waited to charge sufficiently, but didn't. Likewise, Shane could have chosen not going back into the building and powering down while it was burning down, but again, didn't. As a result, we are here in this office having this conversation, Burgess said.
I see what you're trying to do, Agent Van. It's admirable you're sticking up for your partner, but it doesn't change the facts.
The facts, Van said. Okay, try this fact on for size. You try to pin this on Shane, and both you and Ramsey here are going to get hauled up for violating the ADA.
What?
Ramsey said. The Americans with Disabilities Act, Van said. You may have heard of it.
Of course I know what it is, Ramsey said.
Good, because in giving Shane an underpowered threep to work in, you engaged in discrimination.
Van looked back at Burgess.
And when you tried to railroad Shane into accepting discipline for Ramsey's fuck-up, you engaged in discrimination too.
That's a stretch, Burgess said.
It could be, Van agreed.
But you said it yourself. Budgets are stretched thin. You're about to try to suck $50,000 out of the D.C. office. I know my bosses. They will be delighted if Shane here punts up an ADA grievance to keep that money in our till. In the meantime, you two will look like assholes trying to pin Ramsey's incompetence on a Hayden. A really famous Hayden, since you went out of your way to bash Shane for that. And if you lose, well,
Van smiled at both of them.
Disciplinary notes in your files probably aren't going to cut it.
Burgess and Ramsey were both dead silent for a good 15 seconds. Then Burgess turned to me.
And you'll go along with this stupidity, Agent Shane?
I mean, I was given a threep at 13% power when I was working on an investigation where timeliness was critical, I said, and let that hang in the air.
Christ, Burgess said. Well, now that that's settled, Van said, and turned to Ramsey. What do we know about the fire?
Ramsey looked for a moment like she was going to tell Van to cram her question up her ass, but then sucked it up.
The fire department investigators think it was an electrical fire, she said tightly. The building's electrical system's old and not up to code. It's possible Chapman's apartment was drawing more power than the system could handle.
Because of all the threeps in the place, Van said.
Ramsey nodded. There were several there. If they were all drawing power into the induction plates at the same time, there could have been an overload. Or enough of a strain that when anyone else drew power, it tipped the system over.
This building didn't have circuit breakers? I asked.
Ramsey shrugged. Not up to code, remember?
Has anyone talked to the old lady yet?
Van asked.
Shanika Miller, I said.
She's still out of it, Ramsey said. The hospital will call when she's conscious and able to talk to us. The fire department and the police want to talk to her too.
What about the landlord or the property manager?
We can't find either, Ramsey said. The landlord's apparently on vacation in Amalfi, wherever that is.
Italy,
I said. My family had vacationed there before.
Oh, that's nice, Ramsey replied in a tone that suggested the opposite.
The manager, named Woody Poole, is also gone, although probably not to Italy. He told the police he was going to stay with his sister, but didn't give an address or number.
We'll find him.
You impounded the threeps from the apartment? I asked.
We have them. Do you need them right now?
Just the serial numbers and VINs for the moment.
I'll send those to you.
Thank you, I said.
And now, unless we have anything else to discuss,